immigration and sanctuary are two words that we hear a whole lot in the news these days. Good evening. I'm John Pierce, your host on Lehigh Valley Discourse. My guest this evening, Dr. Erica Sutherland from Muhlenberg College, is going to address these topics. She has a special passion for them. We're going to talk to her about that as the program goes along. Dr. Sutherland received her PhD in Spanish literature from the University of Pennsylvania. Now, when we say Spanish literature, Erica, are we talking about any old Latin American, Spanish, anything?
Well, we could. In my particular case, it actually is literature from Spain.
Okay.
But when we say a PhD in Spanish literature, it could be from anywhere in the Spanish-speaking world.
Okay, very good. Because lots of times people will say, oh, that person is Spanish, meaning Puerto Rican, maybe. Or, you know, Spanish-speaking.
That is true. Here in the Valley, actually, when you see a restaurant that advertises Spanish-American food, 99 times out of 100, it's Puerto Rican food.
Correct. So Dr. Sutherland joined Muhlenberg College's Department of Languages, Literatures, and Cultures in 1995. Well, guess what? That was the very same year that WDIY went on the air. So we were on the air in January. And you arrived
in the Valley. We moved in July. And in fact, one of the first things we did was found our local NPR station.
Hey, excellent. That's what we like to hear. And Dr. Sutherland has been teaching courses for the Spanish section in languages, especially literature and cultures of Spain. Her scholarly research focuses especially on the relation between literature and society. And that goes right along with your interest in immigration, sanctuary, this whole thing that's sweeping over the country right now, Erica. She is currently completing a two-volume critical analogy of Spanish women writers. I didn't know about that one.
An anthology, yeah, of
that's
Spanish women writers.
That's a huge undertaking.
Yes, this is why I have dark circles under my eyes, and it's good that we're on the radio today.
How many years have you been working on that?
It's been a fair number of years at this point, five or six years, actually, right. But we're on the home stretch. The book was due in January. Right now, our very kind publishers have given us till the end of May. So we're absolutely working on deadline
well,
right now.
Well, good for you. Well, thank you for taking time to come over and talk to us on Lehigh Valley Discourse with all that's going on in your life. Now, Dr. Sutherland not only teaches esoteric courses at the college, but she also is very active in the community. She's the director of the Grupo de Apoyo e Integración Hispanoamericano. That's the Hispanic Immigrant Support Group. She works with unique gifts and needs the area's large and diverse Hispanic. She works with unique gifts and needs of the area's large and diverse Hispanic immigrant communities. The Grupo de Apoyo, which is a really nice little shorthand for that whole long thing.
It's a mouthful.
Offers resources such as immigration law advice and support, information about local issues, projects that facilitate civic engagement, and community actions that connect recent immigrants with those whose families immigrated decades and centuries ago. This term immigrant is so vague when you think that you ask anyone in a country who's not Native American, are there immigrants in your family to the U.S.? Well, of course there are. And it could be 10 generations ago or it could be one generation ago. So it's a tricky word. Dr. Sutherland is one of the area's leading voices on immigration issues, working in both English and Spanish on WFMZ, Channel 69, Radio Hola, 1600 AM, and her favorite, WDIY 88.1 FM. Now, I say your favorite. I'm going out on a limb there, Erica. Not going to put you on the spot.
I think that's fair enough, but I worked mostly in English on WDIY.
All right. So you have been a lecturer on immigration law for the Northampton County Bar Association's People's Law School. Tell me a little bit about the People's Law School.
Well, it's an informal set of legal seminars that they do, I think, on an annual basis. And it's run by the Northampton County Bar Association. And I was invited a couple of years back to team teach with John Morganelli, the DA of Northampton County. And as I think many people know, Mr. Morganelli is very much opposed to undocumented immigrants and is pretty much a very conservative voice when it comes to immigration in general. However, he and I have developed a pretty deep respect for each other over the years in that we both recognize that we're working to make better communities. And although we're taking different paths to do that, when it comes to immigration, I do know a bit, and he knows a bit about the law. And I think we made a really nice team. So it was a 2-week session that we did. And it was really very interesting. And I think that the people who were attending the classes of the People's Law School were a bit startled by and at the same time energized by the sparks that could fly, where we did come up with some a little bit of tension, but I think hopefully a helpful and healthy tension.
But what's not happening too much in Washington these days, you two reached across the aisle.
It's absolutely crucial.
Good for you.
I have to say some of the work that we do and that I'm particularly proud of is some of that reaching across that aisle. Representative Charlie Dent, for example, again, he's Republican and in many ways is a conservative voice when it comes to a lot of issues, including to some extent immigration. He's actually been extraordinarily helpful with some individual people with individual concerns. His office is always open and willing to talk with us. And to talk with individual immigrants who have questions or have issues or simply want to state their case. So, again, although that might not be my most obvious ally, I consider him a colleague and a friend.
And a great guy.
And a great guy.
Charlie Dent said fairly recently that about 30% of the time of his staff in Washington is spent on immigration issues.
I don't doubt that. And in fact, that was one of the things I was going to bring up when we talk about why immigration is so important as a topic here in the Lehigh Valley. There's a huge immigrant community, and it's not just Hispanic. Of course, I work mostly with Hispanic immigrants, but the community here is, virtually everyone here is an immigrant. In fact, a non-English speaking immigrant here originally in the Valley. Today's immigrant communities are largely from the Middle East or from Spanish-speaking areas, with small but growing larger African immigrant communities. So you have a really interesting mix of people here, and Charlie Dent has really stepped up to the plate and said, you know, these are my constituents. Whether they're voting now, they will be voting soon, and these are my constituents, and I have to give them props for that.
Great. So Dr. Sutherland has been widely recognized for her community work. Local Hispanic press named her La Favorita del Pueblo. Ooh, congratulations.
That was some years ago.
Professional of the Year in 2007, yes, when she also received the President's Award for Social Ministry from the Northeastern Pennsylvania Synod of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. And the City of Allentown's Human Relations Annual Prize. Yeah, it was a while ago, but it just means you have deep roots.
I've been doing this for a while. The Grupo de Apoyo was started back in 1999. So by 2007, we had really gotten our act together and we were doing good things. At this point, we have formalized and we've learned how to delegate more of the work. So honestly, I'm doing a little bit less of the day-to-day in the trenches work, but much more of the organizational structure and certainly the public face and public speaking on behalf of the Grupo de Apoyo.
Well, since 1995, Dr. Sutherland has made her home in Allentown with her husband. Let's give a shout out to Don Jose. She married a Don Jose.
I did.
It sounds like an opera.
It feels like an opera because he's a musician.
Oh, yes. He is Panamanian and instructional designer. Now, what does an instructional designer do?
It's web design and graphic design with a goal to training. So he works with a major insurance company as their in-house instructional designer. So he is very good with instructional design. He's truly an extraordinary graphic artist. And so what he does is he puts his graphic art to training modules.
Yeah, all right. Erica Sutherland and husband enjoy many kinds of music. And she puts here, though Jose is a professional Latin percussionist and Erica is a hopelessly bad dancer.
That's absolutely true.
You must have had something really special going for you for a Latino man to consider marrying a bad dancing gringa. Huh?
It's an extraordinary story.
Oh, let's begin talking a little bit about Dr. Sutherland's passion, which is the whole issue of immigration in the country and how do we treat immigrants and what is Sanctuary all about. There's an event that's going to take place on April 28th, so let's talk about that a little bit.
That's correct. It's Saturday, April 28th, from 10 in the morning till 1 p.m. It's taking place at St. Luke's Lutheran Church at 417 North 7th Street in Allentown, sponsored by the Justice and Advocacy Committee of the Lehigh County Conference of Churches. And it's a workshop. This is actually the second of two workshops. The first one took place early in the fall. And this is the second one to really talk about what does it mean to be a supporter? What does it mean to support the immigrant community, whether you're ready to open up your church as a sanctuary, a place of sanctuary, or not? What are other ways where you can offer that sort of support without actually taking on the full enchilada of sanctuary itself?
Mm-hmm. When you say immigrants now in this context, are you talking about people who are undocumented necessarily?
Well, that's actually part of the question. To be supportive of the immigrant community, of course, is a very broad concept. How can you support the community? There's many, many, many ways of doing that, and I hope we can explore that a little bit later on. But to answer the question right here, a person who looks for, turns to sanctuary, is going to be someone who has an order of deportation against him or her. So that would be someone who is not just undocumented, but has also been tagged, basically, by immigration as someone who needs to go. Now, we want to point out, and I can't say this strongly enough, that having an order of deportation does not mean you're a criminal. It doesn't mean you've committed any crime other than being in the country without proper documentation and having been told to leave and not having left, or alternately having been deported once or having left the country once and then come back a second time without permission. So these are deportable offenses. So we wouldn't call that a criminal in the sense of having committed a crime. Indeed, that is a civil offense.
It's not violence against somebody.
Absolutely not. Right. And in fact, most would argue it's not violence against the economy or against common decency. There's a lot of things that it's not against. But when a person is at risk for deportation and is willing to take that extraordinary step of giving up everything, of stepping into sanctuary from which you really cannot leave, it can buy that immigrant time for attorneys and immigrant supporting organizations to figure out a way to make them get out of that situation, to help them get out of an undocumented situation and into a documented situation, into a protected situation. Immigration law is extraordinarily complex, and there's many, many ways that a person can fall out of status. There's also some ways a person can come back into status. But it takes time, it takes money, it takes attention. And when someone steps into sanctuary, really what it is, it's a chance to buy time for that immigrant to do just that. And certainly to draw the attention so that, A, there's that protective bubble of the public eye being on what's happening, but also it draws attention of people who are willing to step up and help to see what avenues there might be to make that person be able to come into status.
Now, Erica, when you talk about a person stepping into sanctuary, what does that mean physically? Does the person have to go to a particular place and never leave it?
Yeah, actually, that is what sanctuary means in the most literal sense, where a family or an individual would literally move into a safe space. It might be a safe house. It might be a safe church. Often it's a church where a church will set up a meeting room. As long as there's a bathroom and a kitchen and a place to sleep, that's really what someone needs. So people can stay in sanctuary for 2 months, 3 months, 18 months, 2 years. It can take many flavors. Very often, the people who are most concerned about an order of deportation are immigrants who may have U.S. citizen children. So they really don't want to take the children out of the country to a safe, unprotected, uncertain situation in their home country. And so they're really willing to fight tooth and nail to stay. So the children, of course, are able to come and go. But the people who are actually under sanctuary really can't leave because once they leave the church, they're subject to arrest and deportation.
Oh, so those are the adults. Those are the mother, father, grandparents, perhaps?
Correct. Less likely the grandparents, only because immigration law doesn't recognize grandparents as
part of the nuclear family.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, it must be really scary for these people. What do you say to our listeners who might be thinking, what happened to law and order? If these people came in illegally, shouldn't they expect to be deported at some point?
Well, on one level, the answer has to be yes. On the other level, we have to look at the bigger picture, and that would be to say, well, why don't we have immigration policies that facilitate the movement of people who are able and willing and eager to work and to contribute to a community? Why isn't there a way for these people to be able to come in a legal and orderly fashion? I should also point out that here in the Lehigh Valley, the largest numbers of undocumented immigrants didn't come in illegally. They came in legally, but then overstayed their legal status for whatever reason and in whatever way. So I know some listeners may have that image of hordes of people crashing across the river and across walls, and that's just not the reality of the Lehigh Valley. In fact, that's one of the things that makes the Lehigh Valley so extraordinary. It has a diversity of Hispanic immigrants in particular that you won't find anywhere else in the country, where you don't have a huge domination of Caribbean immigrants or Central American immigrants or Mexican immigrants or South American immigrants. Instead, you have an extraordinary mix of everyone. And of course, an extraordinary mix implies extraordinary complexities in terms of individual situations. If you came in with a visa, even if you overstayed your visa, you have infinitely many more options to regularize your status. But then we need to take a step back. Is that really fair that someone coming from Colombia or Argentina or Uruguay should just, by definition, by sheer dint of geography, have a better shot at being able to become a green card holder and later a citizen in a way that a Mexican immigrant simply just doesn't have? There is no avenue for that sort of regularization.
All right. So what you're saying is that it's more likely that a Mexican came across the border without papers than a South American to get into the country.
Well, I feel like I'm going down a rabbit hole if I answer that question. So I'm a little bit nervous about that. But yeah, in sheer numbers, that is exactly correct, only because the laws favor those who come in with a visa. And if you're coming from further away, you're much more likely to have come in with a visa, i.e. you didn't walk, you flew into the country.
Right. And the visa would be for 90 days or some such, and then you'd simply overstay.
Exactly. And that's very common. And again, that's the biggest number, the raw numbers here in the Lehigh Valley. Those would be the numbers.
My guest this evening on Lehigh Valley Discourse is Dr. Erica Sutherland, who is former colleague of mine. Let's make it clear. We taught together in the Department of Languages, Literatures, and Cultures at Muhlenberg College. And you began there in 1995.
In the fall of 1995.
So this is 24 years now.
It's been a while, yeah.
It's been you're not even counting anymore. And we are going to continue talking about immigration and sanctuary after a short break. Stay with us.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Spread the word about your organization or business to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR news and locally produced music programs reaches thousands of locally engaged listeners each day. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable way to enhance your image and to provide information about your services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, call 610-694-8100, extension 6, or visit our website, wdiy.org.
Our topic of immigration and sanctuary, which is quite a hot topic these days all across the United States, is our topic here on Lehigh Valley Discourse. So, Dr. Sutherland, let's just get a very basic question here. Why should people, and you have mentioned congregations, care so much about immigration?
Well, I think the first and the easiest answer is because it's the right thing to do. It's just the right thing to do. As an immigrant nation, virtually all of us came from somewhere else. Again, there are some Native Americans still in the area, but honestly, as we walk around the Lehigh Valley and we look at faces and we hear accents and we hear last names, the huge majority of us came from someplace else. And again, it could be we came from someplace else, or it could be our great-grandparents or our great-great-great-grandparents. I know in my family, it's a mix. People coming back in the 18th century, people coming in the 19th century, the most recent ones back in the 1890s.
Where did your folks come from?
Oof, again, it's a mix. For my last name, Sutherland, we have Scotland. And then on my father's side also, we have a side coming from Germany. And then from my mother's side, Ireland and Wales. So,
all right. And I'm basically British Isles. I go back 10 generations on one side and 11 generations on the other. So I don't even think very much about our family being immigrants. So we have no idea who the first ones were.
We definitely do feel that immigrant pride of people who came here, worked really hard, and made something of ourselves. The Scottish side of the family has been involved in medicine and in different medical allied fields, really since before medicine was a reputable profession. Mm. And then on my mother's side, my maternal great-grandparents came and opened a grocery store in South Philly, and we were that's something that's a point of recollection and great pride. My grandmother, really a total role model for me, was, on one level, a typical little Irish girl, except she was brilliant, and she got a full scholarship and went off to college, and she got a college degree and then a doctoral degree, just extraordinary. And her brothers, who were lovely people, but not brilliant in the way that she was. Oh, I hope my uncles aren't hearing me. but again, as is very common in an immigrant family, not all the children are going to be able to jump up and be the stars. There's a lot of people who are very talented, very skillful, but also they're regular folk. And so we have in my own family, there was some tension about that. But you have a perfect example of my great uncles, who were very, very good people, worked very, very hard, did good things, had good jobs, had raised good families. But wouldn't be the people that are going to be the star-spangled special people. My grandmother was someone who really had some gifts, and it was extraordinary back in the 1920s a woman to go to college and from a humble family to go to college.
Yes, and she wound up with a doctorate?
She did.
In which field?
Art history.
Art history. Wow. And that was back in the 19th century?
No, back in the 1920s.
1920s. Okay.
Yeah.
So women were beginning to make some inroads as far as advanced degrees were concerned.
But again, it wasn't just that she was a woman. She was a woman from a working class family background. And that was where the really special things were happening. That had she come from a wealthy background, it wouldn't have been quite so extraordinary. But she didn't come from a wealthy background. Her parents were grocery store owners.
I think that's the genius of the USA.
I think that is. And that's actually, I have to say, that's why I say in my family, that awareness of being an immigrant family is absolutely right there. Now, my husband, of course, he himself is an immigrant. And so there, not only do we have that strong awareness of what it means to be an immigrant, but we also still on a daily basis are confronting some of the complications that come with that. As different family members apply for a green card, apply to come in, or have complications who, for whatever reason, are not able to come in or are not able to visit or are not able to leave the country once they are here. So it's complicated. Anyone who has an immigrant, a current immigrant in the family, has a rich and complicated life.
Now, your husband is a U.S. citizen at
this
point?
He is. He was a citizen before I met him. I met him a year after he became a citizen. But the year I met him, he also applied for his daughters to come in. His daughters born in Panama. And it took them a long time to come in, partly because the application was approved. But the application not only has to be approved, but then there also has to be a space for a visa for them to come to get the green card. You have to get into the country to get the green card, because they don't give you the green card outside of the country.
Right.
And until there's a visa opening to allow them to come to the country. Well, one of the girls, his oldest daughter, had turned 21 before that happened. So she got kicked to the back of another line. Where the younger daughter, we got the phone call literally 2 weeks before she turned 21 and said she has to be in the country before she turns 21 to get her green card. And we scrambled. And as you can imagine, at that point, we were young. I was just starting my career. And buying a plane ticket on that short notice, it's not easy. No. But we got her in the night before she turned 21, and she got her green card. Now both of the girls are here, and they're both citizens at this point. And absolutely delighted. It's funny to watch the girls. They live down in Washington, D.C. It's funny to watch them raise their children now. And the kids are completely more American than I am, I would say, in a lot of ways. And his dad, my husband, their grandfather, looks at them and says, well, wait, they're not Panamanian anymore. And of course, his daughters are saying, no, they're American.
Yes.
And it's just a funny conversation. And any family with immigrants has the same conversation.
Exactly, the history of the U.S. is
exactly
just like that.
In a nutshell.
So we talked earlier, Erica, about the whole concept of sanctuary, and said that a person in the strict sense of sanctuary must go. Now, this is an immigrant who does not have legal papers, has to go to a house or a church typically and stay there and not go out of that place, have other people do errands for
exactly.
the person
mm-hmm.
until things get cleared up.
Exactly.
And it could be a year or two or longer.
Or less, depending. Certainly in Philadelphia, there's been a couple of cases of sanctuary that have yielded very positive results. In both cases, the people who sought sanctuary were able to leave the churches where they had sought sanctuary with a legal status, which is good.
But then there's another kind of sanctuary that you want to talk about also. What's
and
that one?
What we've been talking about, the traditional form of sanctuary, that's a pretty intense commitment for a church or a congregation or a community group to take on. That's a pretty big commitment. But we are going to be talking at the workshop on April 28th about something called street sanctuary, where it is really more of creating a network of supporters whereby when someone who is at risk of deportation is approached by immigration, the calls go out and people literally come to stand and bear witness to what's happening. And when I say bear witness, I am actually using that Christian term, bearing witness, of standing up and saying, the Bible's very clear that we should be welcoming the stranger, that we should treat the stranger as one of our own. There's no ambiguity at all in the Bible about this.
And that's both Old and New Testaments.
Old and New Testaments. And it's one of the absolute constants that runs throughout the Bible, which in many ways is a story of migrations. Migrations that have happy endings and not so happy endings. But the one message that is absolutely solid is that you should welcome the stranger and treat him as if he were one of your own. So street sanctuary is really about getting the community out to say when someone is being picked up or being questioned or simply being approached by immigration authorities to stand there and say, are you doing the right thing? Are you doing the things you ought to do? Is this arrest being made in a legal way? Is this arrest being made in a Christian way? Is this arrest being made in a good way? And it's extraordinary across the country this has been being done, just that mere presence of a group of people standing there, ideally clergy with clerical collars or whatever designation they might have to indicate that they're clergy, but being there as a presence, as a community saying, we are here to support this family. Now, remember also that when a person gets deported, that's a person gets deported, but often there are wives, husbands, children, parents. There's other people in the house who often have green cards or are citizens, so are not subject to arrest or deportation, but are subject to losing the breadwinner of the family, for example. And so when the community stands up and says, we care about this family, we're going to take care of that family, it's not the same as making a commitment for a 2-year supporting someone in the basement of a church. On the other hand, it's something that's very powerful and can be a force of good and a force of education, because really part of what street sanctuary is about is not just helping the immigrant in need, but also creating publicity, creating a conversation, creating a dialogue, and creating a space where these conversations can take place.
Let's talk again mention the event on April 28th. where and when and what time?
St. Luke's Lutheran Church, 417 North 17th Street.
In Allentown.
In Allentown, that's correct. And it goes from 10 a.m. To 1 p.m. Registration starts around 9:30. There will be fabulous immigrant food there.
I'm sure there will. If you're in charge, there will be.
Yeah, again, this is one of those points where we're happy it's radio, not TV. But yes, there will be good food, and there will be opportunities to, we'll be starting with some biblical reflections. And some of the reflections will not so much be on the note of we're called to support the immigrant, but actually, what does it mean to support the immigrant? Because one of the questions is, well, aren't there any laws involved? I mean, are you breaking a law to support an immigrant? Are you breaking the law if you're stepping in to harbor someone who's
at?
Well, and these are things that we're going to be looking at, looking to the Bible for guidance, looking to the Bible for some sense of what's the right thing to do. And there's some great verses that actually will help us start a conversation about that. We then will be moving into some more, what does it mean to be a supportive? And I think most of us believe that we're good people, believe that we want to support people, but may or may not be aware of how helpful we are or are not being. So we've got a series of videos that are produced by some really wonderful, incredibly spunky, vivacious, funny immigrant activists, and they really call into question some of the well-meaning supporters that may not, they may mean well, but may not be doing well. So just to get a conversation going with that. And with that, we will have some of our young immigrants from the Grupo de Apoyo, some of our DACA holders, who'll be joining us to help navigate those conversations. The videos could make you a little bit uncomfortable because they definitely are sticking a finger in the eye of people who are really, by most accounts, do-gooders. On the other hand, the idea is it's great to do good. It's even better to do good in dialogue and in partnership with the people who are actually being effective and involved. And then we close up by actually having a workshop. Right then, right there, we're going to be writing postcards and writing letters, and some fine folks from Lipoco are going to be helping organize that letter writing. So as a product of this workshop, we will be sending out emails and faxes and postcards and letters in a staged way. So one day the postcards will all go out, one day the faxes will go out, one day the letters will go out. So we're really excited about that.
Getting ready for that event on April 28th.
Absolutely.
And I was going to ask the question, do you expect to have some immigrants at that meeting, or is this mostly for non-recent immigrants, let's call them?
I would say that this is, like I said, this is the second workshop of two. In the first workshop, we made the decision not to involve immigrants and just to have the conversation of what are the issues around immigration, what is sanctuary, and rather than having people on display to say, well, tell us your story, but we're not going to say if we're going to do anything to help you or to work with you. So we decided to wait for the second workshop, which will be this workshop coming up, where immigrants who are actually living this process right now, and in this case, it's mostly younger people. One of my jobs, as you know, I'm a professor first and foremost, but as an activist, one of my great joys and pleasures is working with some of our young people to make them comfortable as public speakers, to make them comfortable sharing their stories, and to make them comfortable knowing where to draw the line about what they want to share, what they feel able to share, and what they really don't want to share.
That's an interesting byproduct of their presence there, is developing their own skills to
absolutely
talk in front of a group.
Which is not easy. It's not a natural skill. And if you have been living, particularly if you've been living in the shadows for part of your life, you're almost programmed to not talk about your situation, to not push buttons, to not push for a reaction. And yet, to affect change, you really need to be able to step up and say, I am willing to speak up. I am willing to talk out. So we have a couple of young people, three of whom we'd hoped to join today, one of whom was going to, but then at the last minute couldn't. But these are all young people who are actually really incredibly articulate, incredibly real, but also effective, because sometimes just real emotion, real honesty in telling a story is good, but can also be less effective only because it is so raw. But we've got a group of people who are being trained and are getting ever better at taking the reign when it comes to these presentations.
Well, I think that will add really a very interesting piece
sure
to your workshop. to have people who are going through this business of, you mentioned the word DACA. Mm-hmm. When we come back from our break, we're going to talk about that.
Great.
To have folks who are in the situation of being in the U.S. without proper documents.
Well, now with DACA, they do have. I mean, that is a legal status, so let's be clear about that.
Okay.
They're still undocumented, but they're not. But they have something.
Right.
So we call them documented as opposed to undocumented.
I see. All right. So it's DACA. We'll talk about that in a few minutes. But they are in families where there are issues of non-documentation.
Almost by definition, yeah.
So, and they're willing to come forth. I imagine there are many who are not willing to come forth.
That's correct.
For fear of the authorities. They may be thinking back to their home countries, that if they dared do something like this in their home countries, they would be persecuted.
Well, and the young man who was going to be joining us today, he came here when he was 2. So when we talk about a home country, we're really not talking about a home country where there's any direct ties. It doesn't make sense to send someone back from a country where they haven't been for 26 years
year,
in the case of this
life
young man.
Almost.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, right, almost the whole life. You're listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org. And we are ready to take another break before we come back with our final segment with Dr. Erica Sutherland from Muhlenberg College, whose passion is immigration, that whole issue of how do we get along better? A good Christian basis for this whole conversation. So we'll be back in just a moment.
Spread the word about your organization or business to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR news and locally produced music programs reaches thousands of locally engaged listeners each day. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable way to enhance your image and to provide information about your services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, call 610-694-8100, extension 6, or visit our website, wdiy.org.
Folk music, from folk classics to the Gaelic traditions of the British Isles, to bluegrass and old-time music of Appalachia, to the modern-day singer-songwriters telling the story of today's world. You'll find it all on WDIY. Listen and enjoy the wide variety of folk music every weekday evening, 7 to 9 p.m., just after NPR news headlines, and Sunday mornings at 11 a.m., here on WDIY.
Dr. Erica Sutherland is joining me tonight to talk about immigration in our country, a very important topic nowadays. So let's ask, what is the current status of legislation regarding immigration?
Well, there'd been a lot of hope that with the pressure of the latest omnibus budget talks, that there would be pressure applied to create some sort of legislation for the kids who had DACA, had or were eligible for DACA. Unfortunately, that opportunity passed, was not taken up, so we have a bunch of young people who are in some kind of limbo. Now, just taking a step back, DACA is an executive action that was brought in by President Obama back in 2012, and it's a 2-year protected status for young people who meet a series of requirements, but basically they're good kids, they've studied hard, they've worked hard, and they'd like the opportunity to stay in the country without fear of deportation. And some 800,000 young people signed up for DACA across the country. Here in the Lehigh Valley, that was about 1,000. And I'm happy to say that our group helped process nearly 900 of those. So,
wow.
We actually worked very hard here in the Lehigh Valley.
Is one of the conditions to be considered as a child of DACA that the person had to be born in the United States?
No, if you're born in the United States, you're a U.S. citizen. To be DACA, you have to have been brought into the country before you were 16, and you have to have been in the country for at least 5 years. And you have to have been undocumented at the time that the DACA was announced in 2000, in the summer of 2012. So those are the basic things. But no, if you're born in the country, you're a citizen. So then that's not an issue.
So even if your parents came to the U.S. illegally, if you're born here, you're automatically a U.S. citizen.
That's what the Constitution says.
All right.
Absolutely.
So there's the problem of if the parents are deported,
What happens with the kids?
If you're not going to break up the family,
right.
Children have to go to a country that they don't know, they've never known.
That's exactly correct. And that is just a huge issue. So we had really, President Trump really early on and rather abruptly and without really good reason, canceled DACA and announced that it was over, it was done. And he gave those who were able to renew their DACA one last month to completely renew their DACA, and this was back in September with an October 5th due date for the renewals. Some of the young people, I'm going to call them students and we'll slip back and forth, but it's young people, they're not all students at this point. Young people were able to apply one last round with very short notice, where they had to come up with their money, $500, about $490 for the application, the renewal. And after which it would be canceled. Well, now, on two separate decisions, the courts have held that the cancellation of DACA was not constitutional, was not legal. And so DACA still technically is standing, but the way they're interpreting it is if you have DACA, you can continue to renew it, but there are no new applications being handled. However, and this is something that I find tragic and just is very upsetting, we've had young people come back with their applications. In one case, it was an initial application submitted in time for the new deadline. In another case, it was a renewal where the government has lied. They've done something that they haven't done before. In one case, the application came back was rejected, saying, "We asked you for additional information. You didn't provide it. Therefore, we're denying the case." But there's no evidence that they didn't ask for any additional information. There's no paper trail. There's nothing. In another case, one of the points of a DACA application is you have to show continual presence in the United States since 2007. That's 5 years before the 2012 original offering. Well, you think about what does it mean to show continual presence? Well, doctor's bills, report cards,
Anything with a date
and with the name of an immigrant. And so when we've been preparing applications, helping immigrants do these applications, really the initial application can be a stack, easily an inch and a half, 2 inches thick.
Ooh.
We're talking a lot of documents, but no number of documents can show that you've been in the country every single day, every single hour since 2007. And so we've gotten letters back saying you have failed to show that you've been in the country continually, which is just cynical.
How could any of us do that? Well, really? Exactly.
And so these applications that I know are exactly the same as the applications that were being accepted several years ago. And again, we're not talking a little evidence. We're talking a lot of evidence. They're now being determined to be insufficient evidence. And I think it's just the order has come down to clear the decks and just say no to as many as you can and clear out as many as you can. And it is just appalling to me that these decisions, which are clearly marked on the letters, this is not subject to appeal. Now, with a good attorney, we're hoping that we can indeed appeal that. But a lot of immigrants get these letters and they're devastated, so they may not even choose to reach out. They're just completely blown away. I forget who it was, if it was Jeff Sessions or some other one of the senators who complained that the DACA kids, that so few kids had applied for DACA because they were too lazy to do that.
Yes,
and I have to push back against that because the energy that goes into doing these applications takes a lot of work. It takes money. It's not free. And it also takes a lot of guts, a tremendous amount of guts and a lot of faith in the government, because the government's saying, give me every address where you have lived since you've been in this country. Give me the names of every place you've ever gone, every place you've ever worked. And so really what you're doing is creating a map of where do immigrants travel, exist, work. And so you're giving up a lot of information on the good faith assumption that the government's not going to abuse that faith.
Right.
And now I'm not so sure we can say that. And I have to say that with great sadness. Now, the other thing that's happening in terms of immigration is TPS, temporary protected status. And this is, again, these are a series of executive actions that have been around for forever. We can point back to Kennedy and the Cubans, the original Cubans coming in the early 60s, who got something like TPS. It wasn't called TPS back then. But President Trump has canceled temporary protected status, TPS, first for Haitians and then for El Salvadorans. And just this morning I saw in the paper he's canceling it for Liberians. At this point we're talking about hundreds of thousands of people who've been here, some of them since the 1980s, living with TPS, renewing the TPS. And by all accounts, settling down in the communities, owning businesses, owning houses, having U.S. citizen children.
Paying taxes,
absolutely. Mm-hmm. Contributing to their communities, both financially and just by their presence. And now, by some arbitrary decision that it's safe for them to go back, or whatever conditions that had been present that first granted them the TPS, those conditions have been resolved. But you just have to look at the newspaper to know that Haiti is in terrible, terrible shambles.
Exactly.
You can't just send back 200,000 people to Haiti and expect good things will come of that. To El Salvador, it's basically a lawless state, a failed state right now. It's really bad shape. And the idea that we could just say, well, the conditions that were present when they first applied for TPS are no longer there, therefore they can go back. I mean, it's shocking. It makes me embarrassed to be... I mean, I'm just appalled that our government is doing this. And with Liberia, I'm a little less familiar with the conditions in Liberia, but judging from the decisions made on Haiti and El Salvador, I don't have very good hopes for that. So I think that's something that I wish people would really step up and say, well, why isn't there an avenue for these people who have, by all accounts, been doing exactly what you want a citizen to be doing? Why isn't there some avenue for them to become a legal permanent resident and then a citizen? And right now there is. There simply is no avenue for those people.
Wow. So you've talked a little bit about DACA. You've said that children who are, and by the way, DACA means?
A deferred action for childhood arrivals.
So they have been born abroad, come to this country. Anyone who has come in illegally and has a child here, that child is a U.S. citizen automatically. And so you have the risk of breaking up families if the parents are deported. And what do? They either take their children with them or the children are here under some other kind of protection. So
I have to say, in the immigrant community these days, there's a lot of anxiety, extraordinary levels of anxiety. People are very stressed out. When President Trump first came into office, there was a lot of fear about raids. And at that point, many immigrants here in the Valley just stopped leaving their houses. They were staying home. And my husband and I are strong supporters of local businesses, of family-owned restaurants in particular. And we we went around to some of our favorite restaurants and said, what are you feeling? How are you seeing this? We see there are not a lot of immigrants in the restaurants eating out. And we were told, well, no, people are asking for delivery now in a way that they weren't before. They would come out and eat. And so we put out a call saying, you know, people of the Lehigh Valley, if you want to support the immigrant community, one thing you can do is go to these restaurants, eat there, spend your money there. It's good food. It's cooked fresh to order.
It's excellent food.
Absolutely.
That is a really interesting point. I wouldn't have thought about that.
It's a little thing. Actually, Ed Pawlowski had it up on the mayor's website for a bit, the restaurant list that I had, saying, this is a great way to support the community. And so getting back to the question you had asked early, how can we support immigrants? That is actually one excellent way of doing it. Just say, we know that you're not scary people. We know that you make good food. We know that you sell fabulous fashions. And as you look around the valley, there's all kinds of businesses that are run by immigrants. I think food is probably the easiest venue for many non-Spanish speakers or those who only speak English to go into the community. And it's a great way to get to know another community. And it's a great way to support financially a community that really needs that support right now.
Erica, before you mentioned about supporting undocumented immigrants, is that actually a legal thing that we can do?
You have to define support. So, for example, going to a restaurant, I don't know that we walk into any restaurant and ask the manager of the restaurant if he has unpaid parking tickets. We just go in to eat and enjoy the food. I think the same thing would go when we go into immigrant-owned businesses. The first question should not be, what is the immigration status of this business? It's a great, simple way of supporting the community. Now, the tougher questions are, what happens if you're supporting an undocumented immigrant? Now, being undocumented per se is not a criminal offense, so actually there's nothing wrong with being a friend with someone who's undocumented. There's nothing wrong with going out to dinner with an undocumented immigrant, with having an undocumented immigrant visiting your house. Nothing wrong there. Now, if there's a warrant for deportation or a warrant for arrest of someone, now that is a different situation. And that's precisely why when we talk about sanctuary, we talk about doing sanctuary in a church, because immigration and police more broadly have a general, it's called prosecutorial discretion or police discretion, where they can choose not to enter a place. And they're not prohibited from entering a church, but they don't.
Generally, they don't.
Right. Exactly. And so there's a respect for that. So getting back to the notion of sanctuary, this is something where a congregation definitely needs to think long and hard about whether they want to take on that role of being a sanctuary site. But in terms of going out to the street to support, there's nothing wrong with that. There's absolutely, that's your First Amendment rights. And everyone has the right, and I would say the obligation, to stand up for the weakest among us and to provide a voice of support. The other thing that the non-immigrant community can do to support the immigrant community is talk to the legislators. If you're a citizen, you can vote. And if you can vote, believe me, our legislators want to hear from you. And they will hear from you. And they will open their office and they will serve you coffee.
Maybe
Turkish coffee. Maybe. But that's something that a citizen can do to really make positive change on behalf of a community that cannot vote, because you can't vote if you're not a citizen.
Right. Let's talk a little bit about some resources that are out there to help us better understand these issues. What would you say on that?
Oh, first off, I would say try to find a nice neutral newspaper, a nice neutral news source. And we all know these days that there are more neutral and less neutral news sources. It's kind of funny, as a Spanish professor, and you'll remember this, in other countries, newspapers are actually clearly affiliated with given political parties, so there's no ambiguity. Like when you buy X newspaper, you know it's coming from the perspective of X party. Here in the United States, we believe that newspapers are all objective, which makes it actually a little bit trickier, because nothing is really truly objective.
Right.
Everything comes with an agenda. And in other countries, that agenda is clearly identified. Here, not so much. So a good neutral news source is there. United We Dream is a resource. It's an organization by and for young undocumented immigrants. And they have an excellent website with incredible resources. And resources in terms of both information, avenues where you can connect with people to get involved with activism. And I think this is important too, they have a button where you can donate. And the donations to United We Dream actually help fund scholarships for undocumented students who are not eligible for federal or state financial aid. So that's, I love United We Dream, unitedwedream.org.
Okay.
Now, you also have on Sanctuary, the New Sanctuary Movement out of Philadelphia, again, has an extraordinary set of resources on their website. If you're a geek about legal issues and you really want the ins and outs of the legal issues, the American Immigration Lawyers Association, AILA.org. Again, excellent website. And finally, if you want to get active, if you really want to do something, there's an organization here in the Lehigh Valley called Make the Road PA. All one word, maketheroadpa.org. And they're really good at organizing communities and organizing marches. And so if that's where your hankering goes, I have to say I recommend getting involved with them. Then, of course, the Grupo de Apoyo, we offer our services. We do most of our work in Spanish, but anyone who's interested, find us on Facebook, Grupo de Apoyo Lehigh Valley, and you can find both information about legislative turns and twists, but also about our activities. And, of course, obviously, the last suggestion would have to be to come to the workshop on April 28th.
All right, let's do that one again. It's going to be in Allentown.
At St. Luke's Evangelical Lutheran Church, 417 North 7th Street, the Hispanic downtown of Allentown, on Saturday, April 28th, from 10 in the morning to 1 in the afternoon.
Okay. And you suggest arriving at 9:30 rather than 10?
Well, actually, you know me. I tend not to arrive early for anything. However, registration starts at 9:30, and there will be breakfast treats at 9:30.
That's what I was trying to get you to say. Now, Erica, I know that you're very interested in different cuisines all over the world.
Mm.
So let me just ask you as a personal question. Do you have a very favorite cuisine if you had to choose?
Oh, that's a mean question because I don't want to hold someone up. But I have to say I love Peruvian food. I really do. There's an excellent Peruvian restaurant in Southside Bethlehem, Machu Picchu. There's another Peruvian restaurant in Allentown, El Buen Gusto. I love Peruvian food. I really do. And Mexican food has a place very close to my heart. I grew up eating Mexican food. Neither of my parents, as we've gone through my biography, are Mexican, but we grew up eating spicy foods before I was eating sweet foods. Mexican food. And here in the Valley, there's some really good Mexican restaurants. Diego's on 4th Street in Allentown. Shout out. The Taqueria Los Amigos on 7th Street in Allentown. Excellent, excellent. Really good, interesting, thought-provoking food.
Well, Mexican is my favorite.
All right, there
we are. We're soulmates. I want to thank you, listeners, for tuning in this evening. We've come to the end of our hour here on Lehigh Valley Discourse. Thanks to Seamus McGrogan for being our engineer this evening. He does the yeoman work over at the board and keeps us going. I'm John Pierce, your host. Thanks to my guest, Dr. Erica Sutherland.
Thanks so much for having us. This is the second interview we've had.
And I welcome you back to our microphones
here. I'm so glad to be here. I'm so glad you're able to have this conversation.
Exactly. So, dear listeners, until we meet again, remember to be gentle with your neighbor.